Penguin Random House Audio presents Persuasion, Convincing Others When Facts No Longer Seem to Matter. This is the author, Lee Hartley Carter. Introduction, When Facts Don't Matter. Today, on the news and in social media, there is much bemoaning that facts no longer matter. By that, people mean that in a world where we have alternative truth and truthiness and consistent falsehoods being disseminated, facts no longer have the power to change minds. But I have to let you in on an industry secret. They never did. In 1972, after news of the Watergate break-in made headlines, Richard Nixon still won re-election by a landslide because the facts of the time were open to interpretation. Just 3 years later, researchers at Stanford did the first study proving that people cling to their irrational opinions, even in the face of irrefutable evidence that they are wrong. The hundreds of studies that followed proved that people actually dig in their heels when presented with facts that contradict their beliefs. If you want to change minds, facts alone have never been enough. The reasons are rooted in behavioral science. At a biological level, our brains aren't hardwired to look for facts. Instead, we rapidly and automatically process opinions we agree with as if they are facts. In the study That's My Truth, Evidence for Involuntary Opinion Confirmation, researchers Michael Gilead, Morin Sella, and Anat Murrell showed not only that our opinions are change-resistant, but that we actually involuntarily reject facts that contradict our existing opinions. To compound this, all humans suffer from confirmation bias. We search for information that confirms our opinions, and we cherry-pick the facts that support our point of view. Our desire to confirm our existing beliefs also leads us to minimize or ignore data that doesn't fit our preferred view of the world. We can quickly dismiss factual information that does not agree with our worldview by labeling the new facts as somehow erroneous or limited. Said another way, shamelessly stealing from a former colleague, when confronted with facts that don't fit inside our frame, we throw away the facts and keep the frame, which is easier and less ego-threatening than getting a new frame. But people don't reject evidence that challenges their beliefs. They go even further. Studies of the often-quoted backfire effect demonstrate that when people reject evidence they don't like, their support for their original position gets even stronger. In Why Facts Don't Change Our Minds, Elizabeth Colbert writes that scientists have deduced that the vaunted human capacity for reason may have more to do with winning arguments than with thinking straight. Providing people with accurate information doesn't seem to help. They simply discount it. Hearing all of this might make you feel hopeless. Don't be. All this tells us is that facts alone won't set us free. They won't tell our story. And they won't change hearts and minds. Decision-making is rarely a rational process. If you want to truly connect with others and shift their thinking, their behavior, their buying habits, or their voting practices, you must engage in a process that goes far beyond hitting them with statistics or study results. This audiobook is about persuading people to change their minds. It's not about appealing to your base or preaching to your choir. It's about engaging with someone who doesn't yet know you, agree with you, or sometimes even like you. It's about the very difficult challenge of overcoming your audience's human instinct to stick to their existing position. It is about giving people a reason to listen and then providing them with the right information in the right way so they can alter their existing point of view. All success in life and in business is based on the scale of persuasion. Put simply, you can have the best product, the best plan, the best policy, but if you're not telling your story in a way that connects and resonates with your audience, none of that matters. You will not persuade people to choose your company or follow your lead. My question to you, and often to my clients, is, which is more important, having a good story to tell or telling your story well? Most people immediately say that having a good story to tell is much more important. They'll say that what matters is being a good company, having a good product, doing a good job. And I agree that those things are important, but are they enough? Does the best product always win in the marketplace? Does the best strategy always work in practice? How you tell your story is just as important as having that good story to tell. My job and the job of my firm is to ensure that companies, issues, and people who have an important point to get across are able to tell their story in the best way possible. That's what persuasion is all about. On election night 2016, I wasn't home like millions of Americans glued to the TV waiting to see if their strongest hopes or deepest fears would transpire. Instead, I was in full hair and makeup sitting in front of the cameras at Fox News. Because even though all of the network's polls suggested that Hillary Clinton would be our first female president, the anchors and viewers wanted to know if there was a chance that what my 18 months of research had predicted would be correct, that Trump would take the White House. Regardless of how that statement makes you feel, regardless of whether you wanted me to be right or whether I wanted me to be right, the fact is that I was, and I was the outlier. How was I able to see it coming when women across the nation were wearing suffragette white to their polling stations and Stephen Colbert had shirtless dancers lined up? Because I knew, based on my years of experience in the field of persuasive language, that Donald J. Trump had done exactly what it takes to get what he wanted, and Secretary Clinton had not. Post-election studies have confirmed it. He won, not because of a low voter turnout among Democrats, but because one in four white male Democrats who voted for Barack Obama switched parties. He won because he had mastered persuasion. Leading up to the election, MSNBC, CNN, and Fox aired my firm's research on virtually every major speech, debate, and advertisement throughout the election process. What became clear was that Trump was penetrating because he viscerally understood the art of persuasion. It's important to acknowledge that looking back at the 2016 race is emotional. No matter what side of the aisle you sit on, you'll find it hard to look objectively at what happened in the election and why. And for all the reasons I have just outlined, it is hard for anyone who didn't support Trump to accept any data that argues that he did things well. There is also nothing more frustrating than watching from the sidelines as someone you support fails to effectively make their case for something you believe in. Whether it's a candidate who loses, a local initiative that fails, or a piece of legislation you wish had more support. Have you ever closed the paper, turned off the news full of frustration, and said, "It's so simple, why can't they just sell universal health care or climate reform or immigration reform or bike lanes better?" It's equally important to point out that when I talk about what worked for Donald Trump, I focus on the way he told his story to the public. In my mind, his tweets and demonstrated untruths were never the key to his success. And my approach to persuasion is based on telling the best version of your actual story, based on real facts and accurate information. But if we take the emotion out of it and examine it like social and language scientists, then I ask you to think about what made the Trump candidacy successful. Trump was able to engage millions of voters because he understood what a significant portion of the public wanted to hear. He knew how his target voters felt. He knew what mattered to them. And he found the most effective way to appeal to them. He built a simple, clear, master narrative that his audience could remember and repeat. It was supported by three narrative pillars, policies we could all remember and repeat. Love him or hate him, you knew exactly what his campaign stood for. For the last 25 years, Ms. Lansky and Partners has been at the forefront of studying how the words, messages, and stories that brands choose determine their place in the market. Because there's nothing more frustrating than seeing a group of brilliant people who have devoted years to creating something to help their consumers be unable to persuade anyone to try whatever it is. Frequently, they struggle because they have been relying on facts alone to tell their story, or they hope that simply having made the best product will be enough. It isn't. So my job is to recognize, decode, and create impactful language for companies from Visa to PepsiCo, from ExxonMobil to Starbucks, to ensure their success. My firm's work has won numerous awards, but even more important to me, we have been able to help some of the world's best companies communicate on some of their most important challenges. While the facts don't matter on their own, I am proud to help clients find the right way to present, frame, prioritize, and communicate them so that they can achieve their goals. And at the end of the day, that's what persuasion is all about. It's about having the tools you need to be heard. Long before I was president of a communications company, I was fascinated by language. I remember realizing in high school that there really are no true synonyms. I used to torture my family and guests at our dinner table by asking them what the difference was between a geek, a nerd, a dweeb, and a loser. It was clear to me that while those words might be used interchangeably, each individual word actually describes a distinct cluster of traits and draws some pretty different images to our mind's eye. It was this ability to parse the distinctions we make automatically that helped our firm to brand Via, Starbucks Instant Coffee. When Via was getting ready to be launched, it wasn't catching on as the company had hoped. Management came to our firm to find out why. From their perspective, they were offering their customers even greater access and ease. But when we looked at the product from the consumer's perspective, it turned out the words instant coffee conjured up exactly what people spend their money at Starbucks to get away from. So we rebranded it as Via Ready Brew, Starbucks in an instant. After we changed...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?